You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host.
I am a bedroom Beethoven.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 68 of the podcast. My guest this week is
Yo, my name is Steve Arrington, and I love music, and I love being an artist, and I'm excited about other artists as well. The music community is awesome. And I've had the privilege to work for some of my heroes and young cats coming up who I really dig. And I'll start with some of my heroes. I worked with Carlos Santana. I did some shows with him. You know, this was a 17-piece salsa band, Pete and Sheila Escovedo. People know Sheila as Sheila E. I started with playing drums and then became the primary lead vocalist for the group Slave, one of the premier funk bands of all time. And then I've also done a track with Snoop Dogg, with the great Thundercat, Dame Funk, and then the great J-Rock from B-Junkies and Redmatic and cats like that, Peanut Butter Wolf, Stone's Throw. So it's for me, it's been quite diverse through the years, and I like it that way. I call myself a music adventurist.
The softest side of life.
Steve Arrington, 80s hitmaker and former frontman of funk legend Slave. And some 30-something years later, he's here with me, and we chatted up through his self-produced material throughout 2014, his new single with Thundercat, and his new album on the horizon. Steve still got the funk and superhuman quantities, and I'm honored to sit down with him and chop it up about musical history and to see if there really must be something in the water in Dayton, Ohio, the birthplace of funk. But before we head there, I want to plug the website, bedroombeethovens.com. I hope everyone is staying safe out there in the world and hoping this podcast brings you an hour distraction by putting you on game with Mr. Steve Arrington. So please like, comment, and subscribe wherever it is you get podcasts. And if you feel so inclined to support me, patreon.com/bedroombeethovens. With that out of the way, let's deep dive into the interview. First thing I have to say is I heard you were a bit under the weather, so I really hope you're back to feeling like your old self.
Yeah, everything's cool, man. I just had a little stomach thing going on, man. Think I ate something kind of dusty.
You have such a storied career. I know you wanted to be a professional musician from a child, and it's important to highlight because some people just want to form a rock band and jam out with their friends on the weekend, but the key word is professional. So if you tell your parents that you choose music, they must have had a hard time with that. I don't imagine your brother saying, oh, this saxophone, I'm going to make a living out of this.
Well, the thing is, I come from an interesting family. My father was a great football player, and he also ran track. He was known as Dayton Dan, and he had a lot of records that stood for years. After he graduated high school, he went on to college and came back to Dayton and, you know, and settled, you know. But, you know, I was into music. I played sports and I was good at sports. I was nice on the baseball field. I was nice. My father was extremely fast in football. I wasn't so fast. I was quick and I could catch anything. But there came that time where, are you going to go pursue the sports angle? Or are you going to get into music? Sports was something that my father did. And, you know, the Arrington name was built on sports. I'm Dan Arrington's son. Yo, you're going to do the sports thing. You're good at it. Yeah, but my heart is in the music. So, you know, there was a transition there where my father and others was like, yo, man, the sports thing is a no-brainer. I'm like, nah, because I don't love it. I enjoy it. It's fun. I dig it, but I don't love it. Music I love to the point that I can deal with the ups and downs. I can deal with the changing directions of styles. I'm willing to study. I'm willing to keep pushing myself and growing and enjoying. Sports was cool, but it didn't give me that.
So I bet your dad kind of blamed your brother for you joining the Soul Agents then. That's probably why your dad didn't buy you any instruments. Your grandparents were the one to do that.
Yes, and getting into the history. Well, my father wasn't against me. I mean, the thing was, is my mother and father were divorced when I was 8. And so, you know, at that time, it wasn't that day to day. You know what I'm saying? We were cool, and my father would pick me up and he would take me to sports events, and I would tell him, you know, I'm going to be playing, you know, this particular club in Dayton. And I mean, because my brother played saxophone, and you mentioned the Soul Agents. Absolutely. And they would bring me along playing bongos if they'd let me in. Some places I couldn't play. I was too little in the club, so on and so forth. But the music thing took over, and he was a sports guy too. My brother, Victor. He went to Clark College, and he sustained an injury. So he only was there maybe a year and half of a sophomore year before he got injured. But yeah, man, the sports music thing was for a while was kind of, wasn't sure how it was going to go. And I will say this, I remember this happened. I was supposed to be at a baseball practice, and then I was supposed to be at this a drill team practice. And then there was also a practice for this band I was playing with called the So Illusions and Eluders. And I had to pick which one I was going to do. And I went with the band practice. And at that point, there was a slight confrontation with the others. But then that's when I made my decision. And so I started to completely focus in on music and music that was more being in a band and that sort of thing orientated on drums. And yeah, my grandparents brought me my first drum set, Slingerland. Yeah, Metal Flake. Yeah, Slingerland set. Dope, man. And that started me seriously in the drum. And prior to that, I was on Pots and Pans and books.
And they introduce you to, like, you know, icons like Aretha. You know, growing up as a child, you're listening to Tammy Terrell and Little Anthony and the Imperials. Tell me how I can get my small kids into that music, Steve, because I'm struggling with Top 40 radio.
Since you didn't have the access that you have now to get music exactly what you want to hear, you know, today, if you're into a style and you can get so many outlets to listen to just what you want to hear. Back then, AM radio, FM radio. I remember before FM radio really kicked off. AM radio. So we're listening to some soul stuff, but we're listening to Everyone Knows It's Windy. And windy has stormy eyes. We're listening to that too, right? So my introduction to many styles of music, with my one brother being a saxophonist, he was more into James Brown and he was more into the counts or the meters. And then I had another brother who would introduce me to the Doors and show tunes. He actually took me to New York once with him and his friend, his girlfriend that he had at the time. And we went and saw Melba Moore as she did Pearly on Broadway. So my music taste, and my mother was into Aretha, but then she was into early Aretha when she was on, I think it was on Columbia, and she was doing more jazz, Skylark, you know, tracks like that. We love the soul Aretha, but I also enjoy the jazzy Aretha. That was always around the house, and that kind of music, the variance of the music is what I listened to. And so I developed at an early age to dig a lot of different things.
Yeah, it's funny too, because Aretha Franklin would not approve the sample for School Spirit off College Dropout unless Kanye West agreed to not curse on the song. I love when a person you sample is such a heavyweight that you have to like adhere to their stipulations.
Absolutely. There it is. The queen of soul.
Yeah, I find musicians of that era to be quite interesting. You mentioned Santana, who took a break and came back with a 17-piece band, right? You know, he played Woodstock, and his manager tells him, hey, there's going to be this concert that's going to change your whole life. And after the concert, people are going to start looking at you the way they look at Jimi Hendrix in the Doors. And you guys will get in trouble because your heads are going to get so big, you're going to need a shoehorn to go in the room. But after that, he had to wait 30 years to duplicate any kind of commercial success again with Supernatural. And in hip hop and modern day music, if you don't have a hit on the radio, everyone thinks you're quote unquote falling off. But can you imagine a 30-year gap between commercial success? The only way to bridge that gap is if you have to have like an unequivocal love of music and a love of what you do.
Well, an artist like Santana, I don't think he looks at success or non-success on the commercial. He loved Miles, Wayne Shorter. He and Mahavishnu, John McLaughlin, actually went into more Eastern religious practice. And so Carlos, what I always dug about him and still do, he is willing to change. He'll go, hey, I'm going to make successful records, and then I'm going to like flip it, and then I'm going to do the jazz salsa thing, and then I'm going to do the jazz rock sort of salsa thing, and or Latin soul. He's done it all, and I think it's all been successful based on where he's aiming, what he's trying to do and what he's trying to get at. When he decided, hey, I want to make some commercial records, hit records, he could do it like nobody else. I mean, he's one of the greatest, in my opinion, he's one of the greatest artists this America's ever produced, and one of the best of all time, period, anywhere, at any time of any generation. But one of the things I dig about him most is he doesn't pigeonhole himself. He might decide tomorrow to make an album with just him and some people playing some finger cymbals.
Yeah, and I know at that time, like Carlos was, he was drugged way the hell up back then. And I think a lot of musicians maybe took drugs to take the edge off, right? Because for instance, you move to the Bay Area, boom, there's Sheila E. And now you're replacing Billy and trying to fill the shoes of the greatest drummer in the world. And you're like, holy crap, where's the Jack and Coke? Now I'm cold sweating, I'm panicking. Or am I Steve Arrington, cool as a cucumber? I got this.
That was my hero. I'm playing music that I'm learning the language of, and they believed in me. And they dug my feel. I was never going to fill the shoes of Billy Cobham. He was my hero, and at the time, he was the greatest drummer, in my opinion, in the world. But the thing about music is, if you're able to contribute and communicate, and they like, we feel you, you're communicating. And that stuck with me throughout my career, because at the end of the day, it's not how many chops you have, it's can you communicate with little or much. If you look at a B.B. King, B.B. King's not all over the fretboard, but he has things that he does, and he can hit one note and you go, ah. Miles used to just play through the changes, crazy through the changes, and then more toward the end of his career, and I'm not talking about Indian, I'm talking about when he got more off into groove-based music, where it was more 2 and 4 based, and it was more, had more rock and R&B influences. He didn't play as many notes. It wasn't that he couldn't, it's just that he was changing in terms of how he was looking at what was appropriate for the music. The music was always on top. So I didn't get into a fear thing from let me take something to enhance my ability to block out the fact that this is an amazing thing going on. If I got busy and I just allowed myself to communicate, that did it for me. I tell you what, though, it's interesting that weed now is legal in so many places. Just thought I'd say that.
Yeah, it is. And what's also interesting, I mean, you consider Billy to be the best, but his drum kit was unusually large. Was it all necessary?
Absolutely. I remember, here's how I first, my first connection with Billy Cobham. I went to Cincinnati. I'm from Dayton, Ohio. I went to Cincinnati, which is Cincinnati's good hour and a half, something like that, from Dayton. And if you're just kind of having a good time, you know, we're going to a concert, right? I'm going to see Frank Zappa. I'm going to see Mothers of Invention. And the great Curtis Mayfield is on the bill. And I'm like, yo, that's a crazy bill. I love all of this. And so I didn't know there was an opening act. So the opening act was called Mahavishnu Orchestra. Now, me and the homies, we're like, okay, Mahavishnu Orchestra, what is that? I don't see chairs on the stage. I don't know if we get ready to do orchestra. What the heck is in Mahavishnu? What is that? And so, you know, being the homies, we looking around and we see, I was like, this is a huge drum set on the stage, and it was fiberglass. And so it was clear, and it had a huge gong behind it. And I'm like, what kind of orchestra is this? I'd never seen a drum set that big. This, I'm 16 years old, 72. Yo. And all of a sudden these dudes come out and they're in white linen, double neck guitar, John McLaughlin. White linen, and then the drummer has on a jersey, college football jersey. Now I'm like, well, maybe the orchestra people are just going to walk out on the stage. Anyway, long story short, they kicked in a song that I didn't know at the time called Meeting of the Spirits off of the Intermingling Flame album, which I knew nothing about at the time either. And they changed my life. Right then and there, I was so blown away. I enjoyed everything I heard after that, because Curtis Mayfield is the mighty Curtis Mayfield. But I knew what was going to happen with that. Frank Zappa, his wittiness and his ability to just be so into what he's doing and not be afraid, I was ready for that too. But Mahavishnu Orchestra, never seen a drum set that big. Never heard anybody play like that. All these odd time signatures in this very spiritual mode. Man, we left up out of there. I was completely mesmerized. Went and got the album, Mahavishnu Orchestra. And from that record, that's what got me into Miles. That's what got me into Bird. That's what got me into Monk. I looked back because they completely blew me away, and I've never come back. I went somewhere, and I've never returned. That's how amazing that was for me. So I know what music can do, because I'm serious when I say I've never come back. I have never returned from when I saw Mahavishnu Orchestra and realized, man, you can do anything out here. You can, because that was just transforming. Of course, then I got into Miles, and then I got into Coltrane. Then it was just, oh my God.
Yeah, I always feel people from that era just had musical superpowers. Like, you can't compete with Hound Dog Taylor. The man had six fingers on each hand. He was born to kill it on a guitar. Flying Lotus is Coltrane's nephew. It's cheating. It's in his blood, you know?
Yes. Big ups to the mighty Lotus, man.
And what's funny is Thundercat was in Snoop's live band years back. He introduced Snoop to Frank Zappa, so he's doing the Lord's work.
That's interesting. That's dope. Yeah, man. You got cats like Thundercat, Suicidal Tendencies. Then he's rocking with Snoop. He's doing his own thing. He can play is crazy jazz, however you want it. You want to swing, he can go there. He's one of those musicians that God is gifted to not only be a player, but he can also write, he can sing, he's just good folk, and he's unique. And of course, he's one of those guys that doesn't turn off to anything. You know, he welcomes different styles of music, and it shows up in whatever he's doing. And Lotus, man, come on, man, the Cosmogramma album, bruh. I mean, you know, yo, I heard that Cosmogramma. I was just like, man, what is this, man? This is crazy. And, you know, I knew that something fresh was happening. Roz G. Yeah, man, I'm excited about what's going on out here. And the fact that he's Coltrane's nephew is just a blessing, because he's continuing to keep the music and he's pushing it forward.
When you see Thundercat play, do you get visions of Grand Funk Railroad?
You know what? When I see Thundercat, he's like a fusion of several things for me. Speaking of Grand Funk Railroad. Yo, that was one of those groups that really killed me too. Bass-wise, heavy bass, rock bass. Thundercat is sort of like a hybrid of a lot of things. I told him, dude, man, when you start to do your thing, it's like Liquid. I hear like Liquid when he starts playing his runs. First of all, they're just flawless. But the thing about him, it's like Liquid, and it's his own thing. It's not Jaco. It's not Stanley. It's not Alfonso Johnson. I know he's absorbed them. I know he's absorbed Lewis Johnson. But he has his own thing. And like I said, when he starts to take off on these solos, it's like Liquid to me.
I just bought a crib on top of the hill. And I bought a brand new ride. And am I keeping it real? There's nothing wrong if I got it.
Well, tell me if I'm right or wrong on this one. Is collaborating with Thundercat and Dame Funk, the younger generation, is there a little bit of strategy in terms of a legacy? Because 100 years from now, is being remembered something that means something to you? Because I don't want people to treat you like Billy Stewart and give you your flowers like after you've passed. And doing tracks with Thundercat and going on Jimmy Kimmel is kind of exposing you to a whole new audience separate from Slave. That must be important, right?
One of the groups I saw was Jefferson Airplane, and then they had like a spinoff group when they weren't touring called Hot Tuna. Hot Tuna had a violin player by the name of Papa John Creech. Now, Hot Tuna, those guys were all in their 20s, late 20s, maybe early 30s, but no, they were more in their 20s, okay? Now, Papa John Creech, at that time, I thought he was in his 40s. Found out later he was in his 50s. But I'm at the show, and I'm right up front and hollering, me and my buddies, Papa John, go Papa John. Yeah, Papa John. And I turned around and I said, you know what? I want to be just like Papa John, man. Just like Papa John, man. I'm going to be playing, man, an older cat. And I'm going to be getting it with the younger heads, man. Just like Papa John. Now, I said this at 16 years old. I wanted to be like that. And guess what? God has granted me the ability and the favor to do that. And I call that out at 16 years old. I wanted to be like Papa John Creech because Papa John just didn't give a flip. If you kicking it, his age didn't make a difference. He contributed and he embraced young people. And from that show, I said I wanted to do that. And I've been about that ever since. And I do love it. So the strategy is not in a, it's not a formulaic strategy. It's a heartfelt thing. It's something that I called into the universe when I was 16 years old.
I'm so glad that you brought up the universe, man, because when you first joined Slave, like when you first joined them, you unpacked your drums and the bass drum split up the seam. Did you see that? Like, is the universe trying to tell me something? Should I do this?
You know that. Yeah, that was some kind of entrance. My goodness. Yeah, I had was leaving the West Coast. My tenure with the Escovedos was done. Sheila went with George Duke. And that's when a lot of the world got familiar with Sheila and David Margin, the bass player with Santana, went back to Santana. Of course, the mighty Carlos went back and just was doing his thing with Santana. And sort of everybody went their different ways. I came back to Dayton and joined Slave, but Slave is a combination of Dayton and New Jersey. So at that time, Slave had moved from Dayton and moved to New Jersey, which the leader lived there, Stevie Washington, and we rehearsed at this place called the Oramont. And I got my drums. Now, mind you, I've played my drums all around, but here's my introduction to Slave. I bring my kit, got my nice cases. I open. Now, I had this fiberglass set. I figured if Billy Cobham has a fiberglass set, I can get one too. Mine was blue. Pull it out, and the bass drum was split right up the seam, and I was just mortified.
Oh, no.
And everybody looked at me. Now, some of these guys, we had played together in a local group in Dayton called the Young Mystics, so we knew each other. And they knew even about that drum set because they had played together with me having that drum set all the way back in high school. So the good part that happened out of that is the drummer who was there prior and was just finishing his tenure out with the group, his drum set was still there. So I started to play his set. And then, of course, I was playing percussion, too, because he was finishing out. I think he had maybe a month or 2 months left before he was going to be leaving. So it worked out, but man, you're talking about everybody looking at me and I'm like, oh man, come on, man. My set is dusty. But yeah, man, that's one of those things we crack up about even now. Like, yo, man, remember you came in? You came in, we all knew you was getting it, man. It was like, oh, hey, just go be in the mix. He opened up the bass drum. That bad boy was like, dying. And we was looking at you like, yo, man, what's wrong with your stuff, bro? Yeah, man, we crack up about that to this day.
Yeah, man, I'm glad you told the universe to shut up on that one. And because, you know, obviously you were born to do this, man, and you've had such a storied career. Was performing at Jimmy Kimmel, like when you went to go see Taj Mahal and you're playing funk music to a predominantly white audience now, it's changed a bit. There's kind of a paradigm shift on the people, the audience that funk music is bringing.
Well, I did go to see Taj Mahal, and it was amazing. First of all, I'm a big Taj Mahal fan. And wasn't a lot of black people at that show. It was mostly white people at the show. I didn't care. You know, I'm there to rock with Taj Mahal. I'm used to going to wherever I want to go anyway. So, I mean, when I was going to see Black Sabbath, it's not like it was a bunch of black folks there. But to do the Kimmel thing with Thundercat, because I've listened to so much diverse music and been in so many diverse audiences, I'm just excited that people enjoy the music. I don't care where you come from. Over in Europe, you know, there's a love for American music that is very different than it is in the States. But, you know, for mine, if you digging it, I don't care where you are, where you come from. I'm there. Let's get it, because I'm into communicating. And that's what I felt on Kimmel, man.
I love that perspective, because Rick Astley, even though he didn't write or produce Never Gonna Give You Up, that track was inspired by in yourself. So funk is far-reaching, even if it lends itself to popular club hits of the 80s.
Hey, to me, funk never has died, because it shows up in different places.
I mean, you could say the Beatles is funk.
Hey, Come Together is funky. Come Together is funky. The Beatles, definitely, that's a big influence for me. The Beatles was funky too. If you listen to some of those early records, I'm not just a pop record. Love Me Do. Bing, ding, ding, ding. It's funky.
Yeah, I remember the Chili Peppers when they did Love Roller Coaster. So, I mean, it really transcends all genres.
Oh, yeah, man. And they killed that. I mean, the Ohio Players, man. Let's just vibe on that for a minute, man. Ohio Players, man, yo. They did stuff like Love Roller Coaster, and then they did stuff like Sweet Sticky Thing. Then they do a joint like I Wanna Be Free, and you do a drum solo to start out a ballad. Come on, man.
One day, child, I won't have to listen to your love.
Who does that? Dope, man.
On that day, I'll be able to make up my own mind. You know, I think I done finally realized. Yes, I have.
I love that, man. And are any of these influences, because, you know, I don't think you've gone on record talking about your new album yet, but is that still being planned for later this year? And I'm going to tack this on. Is this the grand, mystical, Down to the Lowest Terms album that's been swimming in your mind?
Yes. Oh, my goodness, man. Yeah, man. Down to the Lowest Terms. Man, how you know that?
Oh, hey.
Come on, man. I've been saying I wanted to call an album Down to the Lowest Terms since I was in my early 20s. And I never put that on an album because I never thought that what I did sounded like it. And it wasn't just going to be an album title that was just sounded kind of dope. It had to be, the music had to support it. So Down to the Lowest Terms, the Soul Sessions. This record, the new record I'm working on. Oh, yeah, man. Finally. And of course, I never pushed it. It just, I never let it go. And I'm like, this is it. So I thought about it in my 20s, and now I'm 64. And you'll be hearing music from Down to the Lowest Terms, the Soul Sessions, this year. Yeah.
I just want you to know, like, your fans have been waiting decades for that. And unlike the Dame Funk album, this one's all you. Your name is stamped out front. So I imagine that you can create the tracks that you see fit, whereas the Dame Funk album was the first record you made sending tracks back and forth. That must have took some getting used to.
It was different, but I enjoyed it because, again, it was something I'd never done before. And it was a new way of people, you know, the way people put music together in that way. There's other ways, of course, as well, and more traditional ways that I had been used to. But it sounds like a nice thing to do, a challenge. And I enjoyed the work on that higher album. But yeah, this is different in as much as it's me. We're right there getting it in. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I was in the studio. I went out there to Stone's Throw Studio, and we went in.
And here's another component on why I think this is going to be a great album. Something that a lot of people don't think about is the people that you've associated with since you came back into the scene in 2009. Thundercat still goes to church on Sundays. Peanut Butter Wolf is a born-again Christian. Dame Funk believes God blesses you in different ways. And it seems like you guys all align musically, spiritually. And if everyone on the roster threw a barbecue, I think you guys would genuinely all want to hang out with one another. And I think that's important.
Yes. For me, it's how you love people. God is love. So there's people, you know, I can vibe with anybody just as long as they're not trying to push me into something I'm not trying to feel. But then I don't push that where I'm coming from on anyone else too. If we can find a place of communication to where what I'm coming from can add something to what we're doing, that I feel comfortable and you feel comfortable. And then that love thing starts to move in. Like, see, I feel like what you just talking about, cats like Thundercat and Wolf, cats like that, man, they had that love in them. We can relate and connect. Very different people. We all are. But yeah, that's what makes it cool, man, is the bringing together the different personalities and perspectives. But at the core is that love thing and love for the music, love for each other, love for the people to be able to do what it takes to be a musician. It's not the easiest thing. It's not cut out for everybody. You know, there's a lot of people who want, yo, man, it just seems stay. Man, let me tell you something. To do what we do, you gotta love it. It's got to be in you. And you know, when you meet those musicians, and I know my man Steve Shockley from Lakeside, he called them lifers, cats who go through whatever they have to go through and continue on forward to bring the music out. I think about people like the great Thelonious Monk. He didn't leave out of here a rich man. But the other day, I was at somewhere like Starbucks or something, and they were playing Monk. And I was just so happy because I love Monk's music so much. And here it is today. You know, people in different places and perspectives are listening to his music.
The biggest compliment that I can afford you is you've been in the game so long and you don't seem jaded, because the music industry sometimes uses people. Like, you know, I guess Bruno Mars kind of took funk and blew it up. He went into underground clubs in L.A. and took what was popping and commercialized it the same way Karen Wheeler from Soul to Soul was wearing the head wraps first and the incense. And then all of a sudden, Erykah Badu came in with the same look and blew up. And it's not so much about originality as it is just luck and timing that can throw a lot of musicians off. But you've dominated your lane for so long. I wish I can crush it at life the same way you have, man.
I appreciate that. You know, it's real for me. I mean, it really is. I'm trying to access deeper chambers of myself to give more, to communicate better. It's not a who's who better than who thing for me. For me, it's my life's work, and I want to give it my all. I want to be, and it's not just the music. It's also being able to be a person who can function with other people, you know, who can be a part of a good atmosphere that makes everyone feel good so that we can all give our best. Because the people deserve that. They deserve it. Because again, I know what music can do. I know what Mahavishnu has done. I know what Coltrane. I remember my favorite things. He did the live in Newport. I think it was 63. And my favorite things. He didn't have Elvin Jones on drums on that one. It was Roy Haynes played drums, and this was live. I listened to it over and over and over and over. Then, of course, on YouTube, the live, I think, in Berlin, Miles' great second quintet, over and over and over. I love people who aren't afraid to completely go in, completely. And that's what I think about Coltrane, is he just didn't leave anything left. He didn't hold anything back. Miles, cats like that, Wayne Shorter. the great Tony Williams. And I see cats like Lotus and them cats, you know, I'm like, yo, man, or like Chris Daddy Dave, cats, you know what I'm saying? Madlib. The great Jay Dilla, rest in peace. I mean, cats who give it up for real. That I'm part of that crowd.
And that's why this podcast is here, so I can kind of, you know, have a Rolodex of producers that gave you that feeling. I want to give that feeling to other people.
Amen, bro. Big ups to you on that, man. Big ups to you on that.
And I appreciate, yeah, and I know you don't stamp your name on anything. So the fact that you were here, man, it means the world. And I really appreciate you carving out time in your schedule to be here.
Man, dude, Cello. Hey, yo, I'm down, man. I'm excited when we get to talking about this stuff. And you, plus you said things like, I'm like, where do you get that from? How do you know that? See, that for me is like, ooh wee, you know what I mean? It's like, so I'm having a good time, man. So thank you for having me.
When I hear that, I'm thinking part two down the road, man. You and me.
There it is right there, bro.